You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from New York City! I'm Caroline Martin, and I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Kelsey Bailey, who improv fans might know from Harold Knight on Two Teams. We got Fluffy and Sleuth, and on Lloyd Knight, she was on Brash Teen and a indie team that she loves, Future Wives. Kelsey, hello!
Hi!
Yay! Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
Yay! So we're going to ease into this.
Okay.
A great place to start. Mm-hmm. Is at the beginning.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. So where did you start doing improv? You know, what was your first day of improv? Where did it begin?
Sure. I started doing improv in 2012.
Yes.
I was 24 years old, mm-hmm. so I had never done it in college or high school or anything mm-hmm. like that, which was made me very nervous mm-hmm. when I heard all my fellow comrades who were like, oh, I did improv in high school, I did mm-hmm. improv in college. I started when I was 24 mm-hmm. Here in New York at UCB.
Yes.
I decided on a whim to sign up for a 101 class mm-hmm. Because when I was 21, I interned at VH1 in their comedy department.
Oh, cool.
Here in New York. So mm-hmm. I spent my summer going to UCB and mm-hmm. seeing shows and scouting talent mm-hmm. with my boss. And I would watch it and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I would like to do this. Oh, mm-hmm. this seems fun. Oh, yeah, I could get up there. I can do that.
That's awesome.
So it took me 2 years after moving to New York, after I graduated from college, mm-hmm. to finally work up the courage and be like, okay, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to sign up. I paid the $325 or however much it was. And I'm just going to do it.
That's
I can't
awesome.
Put this off anymore.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And like, what was, when you signed up, what was your expectation? Is this like something for fun? Is this going to be something, you know, that becomes a big chunk of my life? What were you thinking?
I truly didn't know because mm-hmm. I was working in PR at the time. I was an account executive at a PR firm just doing like event planning and writing press releases. So I didn't really have any aspirations of being like, oh, I would like to go into comedy professionally mm-hmm. or I would like to do this long term. So I think I just thought of it maybe as something that was fun or like I wanted to prove to myself that mm-hmm. I could do it. Mm-hmm. And I was a very different person when I signed up for improv. And then after I got the bug, I turned a little bit different. So mm-hmm. I think I just went in being like, let's just see how it is. I was a comedy fan all my life.
That's
like
awesome.
All of the people I looked up to mm-hmm. did improv. And I was just like, well, this is something that I would like to do because I like them and I would like to be like them. Huh. So let me just see it. And I went in and I sat in the lounge at the old UCB Training Center mm-hmm. and I was very into journaling at the time. So I took a journal, like notes in my journal. And I was like, I'm hearing loud screams and grumblings. What is going on? And I remember seeing like they had the painting of like the UCB mm-hmm. 4 and there was like a painting of maybe Horatio Sanz was at that time. And I just remember being very excited, but just like, completely unsure of what I was about to step into.
Oh, I love that. And thinking of that old training center, I used to have such social anxiety mm-hmm. there. I'm like, well, I have someone to talk to. Am mm-hmm. I going to sit by myself? So I get it. And did you do like any acting or anything before? Because I've seen you on stage. You look so comfortable.
Oh,
you command
you.
The space. And I'm just wondering, did you just always feel comfortable on stage? Was it easier for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. This is an anecdote that might need to be trimmed out, but I did like theater in high school and in middle school, and I was a theater minor in college, but mm-hmm. I was always a very quiet, reserved kid around people I didn't really know well or like in classes. Mm-hmm. I was like really quiet. Mm-hmm. I had a teacher once say like Kelsey wouldn't say shit if her mouth was full of it. But
what?
I still had, he was a good teacher. No, it's cool. He was a teacher that cursed. So like, you know, he was cool. But he had a point. I was very shy and like not outgoing, but for some reason, whenever I would do like, I was in The Music Man when I was in eighth mm-hmm. grade. I remember family friends coming to see it and they were like, you were a completely different person on stage. I just was able to feel a little bit free on stage in a way that maybe I wasn't in a classroom or with a group of people that I didn't know well, or like trying to carry myself in a social conversation. I feel like it was always inside of me. It just took a while to really come out.
That's so cool. I can totally empathize with that 100%.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. And so when did you kind of know that you wanted to potentially audition and be on a Lloyd team? And maybe tell me a little bit about your indie team.
So I would say that I started to really enjoy improv after 201.
Okay.
I took my 101 class, and I think I was very shy and reserved in that. And I remember the day of my first class show, I had friends come from out of town to come see it.
That's a lot of pressure.
And they would like try and we were trying to like hang out before, and I was like, can nobody talk to me? Nobody talk to me. And this was for like hours. They were walking down, it was at UCB East. We were walking down from the L train. I was like, can everyone just be quiet? Like, I just need to be by myself. And I did the show, and I think I was fine in it, but I still wasn't completely sold that it was something that maybe I was good at or that I wanted to do. So I took a 201 class, and that was fun. And I remember I missed my first class in 201. So I was coming in.
Oh, my God.
A week late.
Yeah.
So friendships had already formed in my mind. I was like, there's cliques are already forming in my 201 class. And I remember coming into my second class and thinking in my head, all right, you weren't here for the first class, so you should really fucking blow them away in this class.
Really, go for it.
Yeah, and I did, and I went in, and I did we were learning how to rest the game, and I did a scene with someone who would eventually be on an indie team with me. His name's Sean. I did a scene with him, and I crushed.
Yeah.
And it was all about the mindset of just being like, hey, fucking kill it out there.
Yeah.
And I did well, and I was like, all right, yeah, I really like this. And then 301, I made, like, more friends and started to find like my community of people I wanted to hang out with. The producer of this podcast, Sophie Alkezian, was in my 301 class, and she's been one of my great best friends in improv and in life. But it was just in 301, I think I found my people and I found my voice. And that's when I was like, yes, I am obsessed with improv now.
Yeah, this is my tribe. I want to continue to do this.
Yeah, and what like a nice feeling, like the way you felt in the lounge at the old UCB, it's like you get so nervous. But then when you find people who are like-minded and think the same things are funny as you, you'll find people you might like in improv, but doesn't mean that you're going to click with them. So just to find people who truly, like, I could feel comfortable on stage with and off stage with was really big for me, and being like, okay, now I will have all my friends be only improvisers. The rest of my friends can fuck off, and improv is my life now.
And it slowly becomes that.
It truly has.
In a great way. Yeah. That's awesome. And I can totally empathize with that moment of like, it's about the group and we should all be working equally together. But did y'all just see me slam dunk?
Yeah, I was like,
because I did.
Yeah, I rested that game real good. Yeah. I went to my laptop and just started typing. I rested it.
I think that's awesome. That's great. Cool. So I would love to hear just a little bit about your Lloyd experience, you know, if it was a pleasant experience, were you on a team with a lot of people you knew from classes, or was it also getting to know these people and do good Harold?
Yeah. So I was added to Lloyd Knight mid-season. They had held invite-only auditions. It was the first time I auditioned for Lloyd Knight 3 times, never made it past the first audition, never got a call back. All of that, just sort of like going in, probably freaking the fuck out. And
we got to pause. What was that process like?
The audition process was
just coming back, you know, multiple years.
The first time I ever went in, I was very naive and I was like, I should be on a team. But it was I don't even think I had taken an advanced study class at that time. And I see a lot of improvisers who are like that now, who are like, well, I'm just going to go in and I should be on a team. I'm auditioning.
Right.
But it takes a lot of even practice auditioning to feel comfortable to make it past the first level.
Yeah.
I always went in with friends so I could feel a little bit more comfortable and not, oh, I'm stepping out with a complete stranger, because that would make me probably be a crazy person.
Yeah, because you're afraid, like, are you going to pull the rug out from underneath me? I don't know what you tend to do or what your energy is like. So totally.
Oh, no, we're both two crazy people. Yeah. Neither of us want to relinquish control over that. So I would go into these auditions and I would like really freak out before. Mm-hmm. I would black out during, and mm-hmm. then afterwards I would just kind of kick myself, and I just never felt great about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also just a testament to like where I was with my actual skill set, yeah. you know? So it took a couple years to feel confident and be like, I know who I am as a player, mm-hmm. and to go in and to present that, mm-hmm. I think puts you light years ahead of anyone else. If yeah. you know how you play and you know how to work your strengths and you know how to basically initiate a scene and support people, you're going to do great in an audition. And yeah. it took me a couple years to figure that out. And also just to get like my swagger, because yeah. you're a 401 student, you still need to learn a little bit more swagger.
Yeah.
So I auditioned mm-hmm. 3 times, never got a call back or anything like that. But mm-hmm. then I had been in an ASP class, 2 ASP classes mm-hmm. where I feel like I grew a lot as an improviser, like especially my very first ASP. I was so nervous going in, mm-hmm. but it ended up being like one of the best experiences.
And was that because you're just like, I need to take a little bit of a break from a Herald right now mm-hmm. and just try something else?
Yeah. Well,
I love.
Yeah. I just needed to show that I can do things when that aren't within the constraints of a Herald.
Mm-hmm.
So I was feeling good, and I think the teachers liked me. So I got asked to do this invite audition. It yes. was a bunch of people had gone in. I think they were trying to fill like 8 slots.
Okay.
So I went in, did a first round audition, did a Herald that I thought I did really bad in. I played a basketball player that said that I could slam dunk from the half court line, which doesn't make sense. And these are the things that come up in auditions and you're like, what was I even saying?
But like, you remember that.
I remember
that. That's a very vivid memory to recall on how important that moment was mm-hmm. in your life. So
yeah.
that's really, I mean, I've been there. I yeah. get it. Mm-hmm. 100%.
There's like all these like weird moments yeah. that you remember as like improv guideposts or whatever mm-hmm. you would like to call them. And yeah. for some reason, I remember that just being like, oh, that was so bad. But then I got another call back.
Great.
And then we did another Herald, and I did a scene where we all were doing a human centipede, and I got on A.J. Patton's back. That did well, and then I got placed onto Brash Teen, and it's I know you got on with Astronomy Club. You yep. guys auditioned together.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you felt this sort of like, oh, I shouldn't be here type feeling, because I got put on with a bunch of people who were... had been on Lloyd Knight for a little bit and were like big heavy hitters. There was Beth Slack was on it. Mm-hmm. Monique Moses was mm-hmm. on that team. So a bunch of people, and I came in feeling very nervous.
Which I think that's basically all I talked mm-hmm. about in my podcast. Mm-hmm. So totally 100% we're on the same page.
Yes.
Why am I here? I need to prove myself. I need mm-hmm. to be aware. I need to do a good Herald. But it's stressful at
yes.
first.
It's very stressful. And I felt yeah. like it took me a... probably a couple months to finally like shake the nerves mm-hmm. and start playing like how I knew that I could play
yeah.
and not just being like standing on the back line being nervous or only initiating group mm-hmm. games or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was a really great experience. I loved being on that team. I felt like we had really fun shows mm-hmm. and it was just like a very supportive, like just the right amount of like in each other's lives. Like it wasn't like my group me was always blowing up, but it was just
right.
like it was just so comforting and everyone was so great
mm-hmm.
and it was really nice. So I was on that team for 6 months and then I got moved up to Herald Knight.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's mm-hmm. really great. And if you were to explain the difference between Lloyd Knight and Herald Knight as far as your comfort level, what it's brought to your life or how you feel on stage, has anything
sure.
changed?
So when I first got on to Herald Knight, I would say I went through a little bit of, my confidence was shaken.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a team now suddenly with Joey Price, who was on Graceland, which was the first Lloyd Knight show I ever went to. And now here I am I have to do Heralds with Joey Price.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is huge. And like, oh my God, Nick Guercio, he's so funny. I didn't know my place there, and it took me mm-hmm. a long, long time to feel like comfortable to play it to a bigger degree than Lloyd Knight.
Yeah.
I felt more of the pressure of like, this is Herald Knight, like this is the creme de la creme.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really stressful to me, and I was really nervous and I was shy even in the green room because I was like, oh my God, like these are people that like I've looked up to and now I have to like be like, hey, Sydney Hollis, how's that beer? Like it's just so, I just felt so out of place and it took me so long to feel like I belonged there. I just felt like a fan.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I totally, this is the same podcast again.
Okay, people who are listening, you are not listening to the same episode. This is a new episode, but we all go through this.
Yeah, and that's totally normal. That's really, I'm just grinning because then no one can see my face, but I totally know what you're talking about. Especially with being on a team with Joey Price. He's just the meanest person in the world.
He's
a monster. He's a monster.
He's so mean. Liz Noth, mean.
Mean.
She seems nice. Mean. She's the mean Noth.
Mean. And Garcia's just walking around slapping
people. So tall.
People. Yeah.
So tall, just thinking he owns the damn world.
So from Lloyd Knight to Harold Knight, outside of kind of that having your full agency and feeling really comfortable, I feel like in one situation you were the new guy and kind of, you know, being comfortable on Lloyd Knight. And then, again, you're the new guy as well. And how did that affect your approach to the Herald? Was there anything different that you were doing on Lloyd Knight that you changed, or were there any habits that you changed from one night to the other?
I think I became a little more strict once I got on Herald Knight. I was really paying attention to like the rules, and I kind of became a little bit more rigid. And I feel like I, particularly in just like the first 6 or 7 months I was on, I think I was just really, the nerves made me just focus more on the rules.
Yeah.
So I was playing a little bit more. I wasn't as wild and crazy as I can be. There are moments where I allowed myself to be, but I was really like, okay, we got to keep the show short. Okay, edit. We got to edit. Okay, well, this is a tangential third beat. It's not a traditional third beat, so I probably shouldn't do this. I should wait. Oh, we got blacked out. I never got to do it.
Yeah.
So it was very much me being in my head, and it took a while to sort of shake that.
Yeah.
But then once I did, I had a lot more fun.
That's great.
And I think that that's just like something that sort of ebbs and flows as a performer, and I'm sure it will probably come up again where I feel wildly out of place or nervous and I just like can't get myself there and find myself playing like I don't normally, like if I'm a straight man too much or something like that. So it's just, and I mean this happened even before I was on any sort of house team, it's just, I think this is, as a performer, this is sort of the natural anxieties you go through.
Totally.
And I still am learning how to navigate them. And I find just like talking to people helps a lot.
Yeah, 100%. We're all thinking the same thing.
Right.
And so going over to Fluffy now, do you find that you are performing in a different way now? That does it feel like kind of like a victory lap now that you've been on Herald Knight for a while? This is your night. This is your team. Do you feel less stressed in that way, or are there like little pieces of it that still remain?
Yeah, I think I have the good fortune of a lot of people who are on my first Herald team are now on Fluffy with me.
Yeah.
So they know how I play. So I think that they really pitch up things that they know that I would like to handle. Like, oh, the mom who just wants to show her tits in college. And like, they're like, yeah, this is going to be Kelsey's. Okay,
Kelsey, let's initiate classic.
Yep, she knows. Just tell her that we're out of school. And there she goes. She's showing her tits or whatever. So it's, I think that I've carved out a place and I feel secure in that place. So it allows me to play a little bit bigger. And I feel like, yes.
I guess let's get nerdy with it, Okon. When you started working on the Herald, or I guess now that you've been doing it for quite some time, what has always been difficult? Or maybe even if there's something that you don't really like about the Herald?
Well, I will say third beats have never been my strong suit. Even, like, I can never think of a time where I was like, oh, yeah, I really knew how to handle third beats.
Yeah.
I think for me, it's, in my mind, I'm just going through a catalog of every funny thing that's happened in the show. And while I'm thinking on the back line, it's happening in front of me. And then we get blacked out. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I had no third beat initiation for that.
Great.
So I think that that's probably the part of the Herald that, for me, I still have not figured out how to do well.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel exactly the same way. And I'm wondering, when you were learning the Herald, was there any advice from a teacher or a coach that I don't know, helped you with Third Beats or even just the Herald in general that you feel like is worth imparting?
Yeah, I, for me, I think I had this exercise that Sean Casey had me do.
He's a monster. I love him as a coach. He's so great.
He did an exercise with me and a couple other people. This was when I was auditioning to be on Lloyd Knight. We put together a really quick practice group for people who got called in. And it was all about initiating from your pattern game. Mm-hmm. So he had us do a pattern game. He had half of us do a pattern game, come up with premises while the other half waited outside. And then we had to initiate from that pattern game to the people who had no idea what the premises were or like had no idea what was going on. And they had to sort of figure out what the game was just based on our initiations. And I think that that helped me so much and just made me feel like if I can clearly initiate a scene, if I can let the scene partner know this is the game, it cuts out so much of that fat of people just talking until they find something or like any sort of vagueness and have them be like, I don't, oh, is this game? And then you're playing a different scene than what you had wanted to initiate.
Yeah.
And I think that that just stuck with me so much in the, I find that you can never be too heavy-handed when you're initiating, especially from pattern game or any sort of opening.
Yeah. Totally. As if you're initiating in such a way that it's undeniable, it's like so great for your scene partner just to be like, cool, I know what you want to play. Let's do it.
And I just found that so helpful. Mm-hmm. And I think that that helped me in my audition a lot. And it helped me just the time that I was on Lloyd Knight. And even now at Herald Knight, when we're pulling from whatever type of opening we may be doing, I just think really clearly on what was, how can I, for someone who had never seen the opening, how could I initiate this scene that they would know how to play? Or if there was someone in the bathroom during our opening, how can I initiate a scene so they know what's going on too and aren't just solely relying on like, oh, I hope the audience remembered.
Yeah.
So I can come out doing an Irish accent and they'll remember the leprechaun who shits glitter or whatever.
Yeah.
Like they might not and your scene partner might not. So don't use that benefit. Like don't take that license to assume that everyone remembers the way that you do.
Totally. And I love that because I feel like also you can see the audience enjoying to see how you interpret that and how you placed it. And you can see smiles of them just being like, oh, man, I saw what you did there.
Yeah.
Because you were so clear.
Right.
I think that's awesome. Speaking of openings.
Oh.
What has been your favorite opening that you've gotten to do on stage? Mm-hmm. And how do you think about openings? Do you like them? Do you normally do them with your indie teams? What's your philosophy?
My philosophy on openings. I love pattern game.
Really?
Yeah. I miss it. I wish we could do it on Herald Knight. I love it.
That's awesome. It's always been my best friend and my enemy. So I get it.
I felt like I felt really secure doing pattern game in a way that I knew how to pitch up a premise and how to pull from those premises. And I like the idea of just taking words and finding something with it. Like, I love the premise keeper exercise where it's like a word, someone come up with a premise. So I just find a lot of comfort in the pattern game. Also, maybe it's just like for nostalgic reasons because I have such fond memories of Lloyd Knight. That said, I was only on it for 6 months, so I understand people who are on it for longer who are like, go fuck yourself with your pattern game. So I like that. The first team I was on, Sleuth, we did a deconstruction and a little bit of Fluffy, we did a deconstruction. I think that's really fun to sort of just do a scene where you don't have to worry about game. You're just pitching up ideas and premises and characters, and then we kind of don't touch them for the rest of the 2 minutes and then bring it back. I think that's really fun, and I think it helps the audience just see what's coming in a way that is very fun to me.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I like Invocation too, but I haven't done that in a very long time.
I hate the Invocation.
Really? How come?
I always come out of it and I'm like,
what?
I just have like, I just have like, if our word was cat and I'm like, I am something to pet. Like, I guess I could initiate, like, I'm a lady who's up to no good. But, like, I don't know. I just want more data before I go into
Yeah, and there's always someone who's like, oh, I am cum on the piano.
No!
And you're just like, oh, well, all right. So now it's what? I'm fucking.
Yeah.
So it's always, I'm really giving great examples. Leprechaun that shits glitter and cum on a piano.
I mean, I was a unicorn police officer.
Right?
So I get it. I get it. So I guess, you know, this is such a vast community here in New York. And one of the things that I talked about on my episode was Astronomy Club and, like, finding my tribe. And, like, were there any, like, I don't know, jams that you really loved or, like, moments where you were like, oh, my gosh, I found the people who understand my voice, who like the same things that I like, or maybe the teams you were placed on already had that built in. But was there some kind of opportunity or a moment where you were like, yes, I found my people.
Yes. In my 401 class that I took with producer of this show, Sophie Alkezian, after we took our 301 together, is when I met Kelsey McLaughlin, who the three of us decided to form an indie team. At Kelsey McLaughlin's request, she said, just the three of us should form a team, nobody else. And we were like, okay. And I think having the two of them, at such an early stage in my improv career and just having them as friends and as scene partners made me be like, oh, I feel like unstoppable with these two. And we've been an indie team ever since. That was like 4 years ago. We've traveled together. We've gone to festivals together. And this was before any of us were ever on house teams. We were just trying to find new places we could play. We did monthly shows that we hosted. And it was just so nice to find two other people who shared my sense of humor and like knew that if I said pop six Cicero Lipschitz, that they all know Chicago, that we're doing a Chicago scene. And like then we would just be so in sync. And I find that that's so rare. Like you get placed on these house teams and you're not always guaranteed to have chemistry. So to have, and I'm sure you feel this way about Astronomy Club, to have people that you just know. I'm going to, even if we're bombing, I'm still going to have so much fun with these people and they're not going to hold it against me that I ignored when someone said they flushed themselves down a toilet. You know, like it's, there's no anger with one another. There's no resentment. It's just like, we love each other. We get to do comedy on big and small stages for some audience or no audience or big audiences. And it was just, it gave me so much confidence because they allowed me to do whatever I want. And they had my back 100%.
100. I love that.
Do
you coach a lot?
I do.
I'm curious. This is one of my favorite questions for coaches. What note do you feel like you're giving the most?
Oh, my gosh. The note that I tend to focus on a lot, just because I hate to see it, is we're talking about the game, we're not playing the game. We're talking about something fun, we're not seeing something fun. So that's consistently my note to, like, let's make it active. Let's not be two people talking about a dinosaur's first visit to New York City. Let's be the dinosaur's first visit to New York City. So just like, and I think that also comes with the confidence that you have on stage, because it takes a it's a big risk to come out and pretend to be a dinosaur, you know? It takes a little bit of confidence, and I think just in practices is when you should feel that free to do it. So I always try to create an environment where I want people to, like, play big and just play supported. And I think then you can start to feel more comfortable to do active scenes as opposed to, like, two people sitting and being like, I heard that there's a dinosaur coming to the city. I heard that, too. It's cool to hear things, like, and then we're just talking about it for whatever, however long. I get so frustrated when I have to watch shows or be part of shows where it's three scenes of two people sitting in a chair talking the whole time. I just, like, it drives me bonkers.
No, I can totally understand that. Make it active. Get up. Be that monster.
If you're going to be in a chair, at least move it to a different part of the stage so we can mix it up a little bit. Or like
the stage picture.
Give me a stage picture. At least one of you have a cup of coffee in your hand or something just to entertain me a little bit. Come on now. So I feel like that's my big thing that I focus on a lot and a big thing that I'm just consistently giving a note of. Not by anyone's inability to do so, but just what I seem to focus on the most.
Great. That's awesome.
And what did you? What's yours?
Well, mine is committing, commitment, and high energy on stage. Even if the ship is going down, have fun with it. I like to say, poop it out. Poop it out and have fun. You know, coaching is so hard, and you go through so many different stages as being coached on a team versus your indie team. And I'm wondering, has there ever been a moment where you really felt like, I just really, really bombed?
I really bombed. Versus, I really succeeded. Alex asked me this question, and I really appreciate it.
There's so many times when I walk off the stage being like, I should quit improv. I should stop. Should I quit improv? I am doing... that was horrific. And I think I'm still even learning how to handle that. Mm-hmm. I'm still learning how to handle having a bad show. Yeah. And I'm not the type of person to blame it on the audience or blame it on my scene partners. I'm always going to be like, I fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I should not have done that. I'm very hard on myself as opposed to the extremities with which might affect your set. But those are the small things because you're still allowing those small things to affect you. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you are then manifesting it out to the audience. So the audience, if they are small and quiet, has won as opposed to you just ignoring that. Sebastian.
Sebastian.
Sebastian gave us a... He was coaching one of the teams that I had for a little bit, and he gave us a really good note after, like, a set where maybe we didn't do so great, and maybe the audience wasn't loving us. We were like, well, the audience was cold when we came out. We didn't even have them from the opening. He goes, well, then you allowed the audience to win. You shouldn't allow the audience to dictate your set. You should still be out there giving the best you can and having fun with each other, because at least there's 8 people out there who are having fun if the audience isn't having a good time.
Yeah.
Like, and that's something that I've really taken to heart. And like, okay, so they didn't laugh at my whatever Battlestar Galactica joke. Whatever, let it roll off my back.
Yeah.
So I'm been very focused on not allowing the audience to dictate my set in a way that affects how I'm performing.
Cool. And a moment you succeeded?
Moment I succeeded. Now, do you mean this in a way of like the team succeeded or?
Yes. You can have a totally selfish moment where you're like, I destroyed in this moment. But I understand also we don't want to isolate ourselves. We're part of a larger team. So it's up to you how you interpret that.
I was in a cage match set with Future Wives. We won once, which was really nice. This was when a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was in a scene. We do a Spokane. So we were in a scene where we were talking about the character Friends. And there was a scene where we were talking, we were kind of assigning which one we would be. Like, I was Monica because I was like really athletic and really competitive. Kelsey McLaughlin was labeled Phoebe because she was like finding herself or whatever. And then we labeled Sophie as Rachel, and the reason that we all gave in unison was because her nipples are always showing.
Yes!
And for any Friends fans, you know that Jennifer Aniston's nipples were always visible.
Always.
But it was a moment where we were all in sync and all just like, this is it. And it was just so wonderful. And just like, that was where I was like, okay, I am with the right gals. We are doing the right thing. This is who we are, so this is what you're getting. And it was just so redeeming and just so satisfying. And like, I've never felt so secure in a moment where we were objectifying a woman. But whatever. Like, I felt so secure in my objectifying. But it was just like a moment where I was just like, awesome.
That's so great.
This
and when
feels
you guys
good.
Like literally are connecting on stage and you're just like, it could not be more perfect. Ugh. I love that. What do you like improv-wise? What do you like to watch and consume? Is there a group that you're obsessed with, or is there a style or a form that you just love the most?
I love teams that are on board with each other and teams that are active and they make big moves. I mean, I love the Mannequin Room. I've loved the Mannequin Room for forever. And Brian Uretta was my first indie team's coach and still continues to coach us when we decide to have practices every once in a while and has just been such a champion. Everyone on that team, Chrissy and Lou, they all just have championed me. And they just do improv that I want to see.
Yeah.
They have fun with each other. And that's so... the audience can feel it and they automatically ingratiate themselves to the audience because they are out there and they're having so much fun and they're fucking with each other in a way that's not mean. It's just like fun and they they are active with their tags. They're playing different characters. They're moving all around the stage. They use the entire stage. And I just can't get over that energy.
Yeah.
It's so palpable that I could just watch. If they were the only team to ever exist ever again, I'd be fine with that just because I love them
They're so funny. And it's like an interesting combo platter of like, this all is technically sound, but like you guys are having so much fun and messing around with each other. And it's just like so joyous.
Yes.
And loud sometimes, sometimes and all the time. But it's just so much fun. I love. That's really great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
this is, I guess, looking back that like, you know, you took 101 kind of on a whim. Do you ever imagine if you never took that class? Is that a weird question?
I do wonder what I wonder it when I'm thinking about where I was in my career when I started doing improv. And if I had stuck with improv, if I had not done improv, I would have I would have a much better job because I kind of have allowed myself each year to be like, I need something that requires a little less time during the day because I'm out till midnight at night or whatever. I would be I would have a much more advanced career. I would be much more financially stable. But also, I think the big thing for me is that I would maybe still be in the closet, which I know sounds crazy, but I think with this newfound confidence that I found through improv and on stage, it allowed me to present more of who I knew was inside me to the exterior.
And that's so much more important than a great career.
But I could be rich. I'd be rich in the closet. But I think that I found, I just...
Nice closet.
Right, it'd be a real nice closet. But I think that, and that's something that I credit so much for UCB, is turning me gay. No, I'm just kidding. It just, it changed my life for in so many different ways. It gave me confidence and it just allowed me to be the person who I knew was always inside me. It's that girl who wants to be on stage. And it just gave me the confidence to live my life to the fullest on stage and off, which I think is special. And I'm sure that it's helped people. I'm not the only person who has had this.
No, totally. I feel like there are so many people who leave their jobs, go home, and then go back to work and, like, don't play with other people and connect with other people. So what is your personal approach to successful improv? In your mind, you always got to do what to have a good scene?
You always have to. Oh, my gosh. In a good improv scene. It's hard because sometimes I don't think that what I'm about to say is right. But you always have to be open to other ideas. You have to be open to other things happening in a scene. You can't be so focused on what you want to do or how you think a scene should go. You need to be open to your scene partner, to the people on the back line, to the idea that maybe game may have shifted from what was pitched up in a pattern game to what's happening on this on stage now. So you gotta go with it. And I think the people who are able to be flexible and see outside their own, I got a real good premise idea, I'm going to be so funny. People who can see outside of that are so much more successful because they're open to playing and scene partners respond to that. So I feel like that's more of like a bigger idea as opposed to like you always should be in a bank or like whatever.
But no, totally. I get you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I totally agree with you wholeheartedly. So be in a bank.
Yeah.
I love that.
Every scene should happen in a bank.
In a bank, 100%.
It should be transactional and you shouldn't know who the person is and you should say, who are you at the top? It should always start with a question.
Yeah. A big old question and then start pooping your pants.
And start pooping your pants and then, and then cut to something foul.
And you, for those, I want to go back to those advanced study performance classes that you took. What was the focus in those classes and, and maybe who the teachers were and, and your thoughts on those classes?
Yeah. So the first ASP I ever took was the genre two, which was taught by Brian Foss.
Yes.
And it was a really great class filled with people who I don't think had been in many ASPs before. So it was a fresh crop of people bringing excitement and maybe a little bit of nerves to the stage. And what we did was we focused on our sets being within a genre, whether that is like an old Western or like, you know, a Beastie Boys music video genre, like any sort of genre, be it.
So not even just like movies or TV, just like
anything.
Wow.
It could be like a book, like a Mark Twain novel themed. And we would get a suggestion of a piece of art never before seen or something, like a title of something that's never before been seen. And then our opening, we would sort of decide what type of genre it is. And then we would do it, and it was very fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did that feel like it stretched you out? Because I feel like, would you guys talk through all of these genres, or just at the top of your intelligence, you're like, I'll figure this out?
Yeah, it was kind of top of your intelligence, just because there's a lot of genres I don't know very well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know many sci-fi dramas. So Same. It really, once again, you have to be open to whatever is going to happen and just sort of go with it, rather than being like, oh, I don't know what it is, so I'm just kind of sink in the back, so I'm not going to really be anything. Maybe I'll come in as an extra alien or whatever, but I don't know anything about sci-fi. You just have to be like, okay, sci-fi, based on my limited knowledge, or just what's going on with me, how can I join? And a lot of the times there would be games that were much bigger than just the genre, you know?
Right.
So you can still play game if you don't know sci-fi.
Yeah, totally. And you should be empowered and just move forward. I feel like a lot of my students will freeze if they're like, well, I haven't seen Harry Potter.
Yes.
So, but like, you know that there's some witch stuff going on. They're in school. So adolescence and add a wand, you're going to be fine.
As long as, even if you, all you know is that they're British and you have a British accent, you're light years, it's just fine.
Yeah.
You just need to go with the group and see what the group is doing, as opposed to trying to bring out that great specific that's going to tear the house down when you come out as, I don't know, Ron Weasley.
Nice.
So I don't know that much Harry Potter. But it's just like sort of being flexible, and I think that I found a lot of that in the genre class.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that sounds really cool. As far as committing in different ways and stretching yourself as an actor and a performer to just do something new. And I feel like especially when you're drilling Harold so much, it's so nice to do something completely different. What was the other one? Do you remember the second one?
I was in two other ones. The other one was The Way of the Samurai with Ryan Carles, which is a much more like meta approach to improv. So he would send us like every day he would send us an email with
every
like
day?
Different, yeah, with different parts of like a book from, I think it's called The Way of the Samurai. I apologize if I'm wrong, but he would send us different passages and how we can apply it to improv. So it was very like focused, and it was very interesting. And it was always like, let's focus on like the art of it. We don't always have to go for the laughs. And I was just like, I kind of always have to go for the laughs. So it was definitely a lot more patient way for me to do improv that I think also really helped me.
That's really cool. Like a philosophical approach.
Mm-hmm.
And what form were you guys doing?
It was kind of just like a montage.
Oh,
we would start with a haiku was our opening. We would do a haiku based off of a suggestion.
That's
and
awesome.
Then we would do just like a montage set from there.
That feels like improv and meditation.
It was so hard to keep track of a haiku while you're like in it. Like we would all just kind of like count the syllables on our fingers.
Oh my gosh.
So it really was a lot.
What is that? 797?
Yes.
Wow.
I think.
Maybe. I don't.
I think it's 575.
575. There it is.
575.
Wonderful.
Mm.
Well, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh. Thank you so much.
So
it's been really lovely.
It's so weird how we all have so much in common.
I know.
And feel the same way on Lloyd Night, on Harold Night, and going through that transition. And so I'm just wondering, knowing what you know now, is there any little piece of advice that you wish you had or you wish you knew just to either relax yourself, give yourself confidence, or even just that you're on the right path, anything at all?
I think that if I could give myself a note, at least for the starting out when I was first starting in improv, it would be don't be afraid to be weird.
Yes.
I for 101 and 201, I was very much always the straight man. I didn't play huge, big characters. I kind of was just like setting it up so that I could help navigate a scene, but I was never like the weird thing. And I think once I allowed myself to be that weird thing, and that probably didn't come until I was in 401 or my first advanced study, that I truly started to feel like the confidence to just be, not to be afraid to be the weird thing or take big swings. It just opened up my entire way that I approach improv and who I was as a player. Mm-hmm. And I think that I wish I had known that in 101 or 201. Mm-hmm. And I think that I think I was just still trying to gain the confidence to even be there. Mm-hmm. But just to know that, like, you got this, you can stretch it a little bit. You can try something new.
Yeah.
I think that would have just been really helpful and gotten me out of, like, feeling like just a girl on a stage. You know what I mean?
100%.
I always try and be like, this is such a weird thing, but I always am very cognizant of being like, okay, well, you're a girl in a kind of male-dominated field. Try, when you're up there, don't just be there because they need the girl.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Be there because
you're
a great player. Mm-hmm. Don't just be a girl on a stage. And that's something that I kind of instill within myself every
time.
You're
not the stand-in mom, mm-hmm. sister, whatever.
Yeah. You're not the person that needs to be there so they can point to someone and be like, baby. Like, you're there because you're a good player. You're a strong player. You are funny. Like, you're there for a reason. So don't ever make yourself feel like less than just... You're not... You're more than just a girl on a stage.
100%.
And I think that that's something that... took me a little bit of time to learn, but mm-hmm. once I did, sorry fellas, keep the fuck up.
And you know, I know that we're wrapping up, but we didn't really get to talk about your identity and how that informs your improv. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, you know, as a woman, as a gay woman, mm-hmm. like, what has that experience been like here at UCB on stage? I always find that, you know, when I'm teaching or I don't know, even coaching, I would say the majority of all relationship scenes seem to still be, you know, in a male-female kind of dynamic. And I'm mm-hmm. curious from your perspective, either in class or, like, in coaching or whatever, like, what are your thoughts on that? How does that make you feel? Or, you know, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think that I try to bring my own identity just in a way that if I want to label someone as my wife in a scene, people mm-hmm. won't be like, oh.
Right. That must be the joke.
We found the weird thing. Two women. Oh, my God. I just try and I always find that I don't try to be, like, preachy with my improv, but, like, I'm still trying to educate an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I might throw some things in there that might appeal to my community, whether it's, like, talking about going to Provincetown and, like, mm-hmm. a couple people will know that that's, like, a gay destination.
Yes.
So I'm still trying to, like, have parts of my identity on stage in mm-hmm. a way that it's not the weird thing. And I think that showing people that it doesn't always have to be a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And also just not being afraid to talk about things in my life on stage, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I do a show with Stephen Paletta and Patrick Keane and Kelly Quinn called Here and Queer, and mm-hmm. we're trying to call it Gay Ass Cat, where we have improvisers and guest monologists, and it's just been such a wonderful, freeing experience to be able to be on the UCB Chelsea stage and just bring what we know and our shared knowledge and, like, mm-hmm. our background for, like, an audience who might not, even from, like, the monologist who's telling stories and educating people to, like, the way that we are in scenes, and we don't have to be afraid to be flamboyant and then have that be labeled the weird thing.
Yeah.
I was talking to Lou Gonzalez about it. He's like, I just can feel free and I can be a little effeminate, but that's not going to be the game of the scene because that's just who I am. That's my identity. And we're not going to be disrespecting that to the degree where we make it a joke or a game of a scene.
Yeah.
And it also just makes me really tuned into things that I see on stage that make me mad and are disrespectful.
Yeah. And how would you, I mean, that kind of joy of being able to access a different part of your identity is so unique and it's so wonderful. Because I was literally talking about the same thing from the perspective of being a woman of color of, like, astronomy club, we'll do more race-related stuff. Mm-hmm. But then maybe on a different team, I won't dive into that material. And it sounds like you do something similar a little bit. And I'm wondering, how do you, I don't know, think about that? Is it code switching or, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I can't really wrap my head around it in my mind of, like, why I reserve, I don't know, race-related content for maybe just a safe space where I feel more comfortable to dive into it. But what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think it's for a little bit of a safe space. Sometimes mm-hmm. I've swung and tried to do scenes that I think I'm saying something in a way that can be challenging to social norms or whatever, or I can do a scene where I feel comfortable, but the audience might not know that I'm a queer woman. Mm-hmm. So when I'm doing shows like Hearing Queer, they obviously would know. So I'll feel a little bit more comfortable to talk about things with the satisfaction or just like with the ease of knowing that mm-hmm. the audience knows, like, oh, this is a queer woman who's presenting this idea.
As a queer
of, like,
woman, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I said gay earlier.
No,
that's
all good. That's all good. So I just feel like a little bit more ease to talk about things and not have to make the audience maybe question, like, oh, is she doing something that's like kind of homophobic up
oh,
there?
Oh, yes.
Do you
I
know
see.
What I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can't immediately see that person's identity, you're like,
right.
What are you up to?
Yeah. I don't present queer, so I think mm-hmm. it's sometimes. Creates an area of gray, like my teammates will know, but it's kind of like, oh, the audience might not. So mm-hmm. I might not feel as comfortable at a not. And there's other great queer improv shows. Thank You for Coming Out at the Magnet that I do a lot. There's a lot of great queer headlining shows where I can feel a comfort to sort of really allow myself to use that part of my identity mm-hmm. where I might not. When it's to the general public. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
It's like you
got
to think
yeah.
about the venue and like the people who might be coming and how it's things like that. So
100%.
On Herald Night, I might not so much do a show that's about like, you know, thinking any woman that's with another woman is a couple because people will be like, oh, that's fucking homophobic. But in a
yeah
another show, I might feel comfortable to do it.
Yeah, I totally 100%
yeah.
know exactly where you're coming from.
And that's why it's hmm. important to have shows that can create that safe space and create that sort of diversity opportunities for
yes.
both audience and performers.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more on most things that you've said today, which is actually really, I'm not going to get emotional, but like it was really wonderful to listen to you. And it's just so much that we have in common that is just inspiring, but also yeah. we should all be having beers and talking about
we
this
really
more
should.
So we all
See,
know
these
it's
are
in
the
our
things that you
heads.
Get nervous to talk about
yeah.
in the green room when you're like, oh my God, there's Caroline Martin. Oh my God, I love her so much. She's so great. But
talk to me.
Put,
I'm
put
trying
a
to figure
mic in front of us
out.
And we'll do it.
Oh,
it's just
gosh.
Everyone should feel empowered to talk about
yeah.
the anxieties that come with performers. We're not always going to be perfect.
Yep.
We're not always going to have a stellar show, and don't allow that to make you feel like you need
yeah.
to turn inwards. Like, talk to your teammates. Talk to your friends, talk to your teachers, your coaches. I'm so sorry that I took this as a PSA towards the end, but
you must.
Let's just empower
you
yourself
must.
through chatter.
You must. And thank you so much for being here, Kelsey.
Thank you.
Bailey.
This was lovely.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. We got it. And that was a long-form conversation. Next week's episode will pick up with a new round of improvisers based in Los Angeles. But fear not, because Kelsey Bailey will be returning as your host in 5 weeks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Over and out.
Bye.
Bye.
Follow me on Twitter.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBTheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
What up, jabroniacs? This is Dan Black from the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, the podcast where the world of comedy collides head-to-head with the world of professional wrestling. Past guests on the show have been WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler, WWE superstar John Morrison, WWE superstar Damian Sandow, plus hilarious comedians Lucas Brothers, Dante Germain. The list goes on and on and on. You can listen to the podcast every single Thursday. We are part of the UCB Podcast Network, jabronis.